Today's episode is sponsored by My Mission Journal from My Give Back Books. Clive, you went on a mission. How was your record keeping?
Well, you remember Chemish, how he had one verse and then passed the record on to his brother?
Yes.
That's essentially how my record keeping was.
Well, My Mission Journal is a tool designed to guide each missionary through their journal entries. What was day one like? What was my first ward like? What was the mission program look like? My Mission Journal is now available on Amazon, so check out our Facebook and Instagram for links. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of If You Could Hide to Colab podcast. My name's Daniel. This is my brother, Clive.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. Daniel, we're in quite a bit of history here now in the scriptures. We've gone, you know, we haven't moved away from the doctrine. There's a lot of doctrine embedded in it, but it's a very historical account, I feel.
I agree. You know, you and I have talked a bunch of times about wanting to talk about doctrine in this podcast. And now we're at a stage where there's just so much history, and this is where we really learn about Mosiah. And then we branch off into another place, a place that we'll learn is called Lehi Nephi, and then the history and the records of those people. So it's really, really interesting. And I really enjoyed reading up and studying a little bit more about this lesson. I do have a quote, though, that I can kick us off with by Gordon B. Hinckley. Believe in the sacred word of God, the Holy Bible, with its treasure of inspiration and sacred truth, in the Book of Mormon as a testimony of the living Christ. Believe in the church as the organization which the God of heaven established for the blessing of his sons and daughters of all generations of time. So we are at Mosiah 7, and then we go to Mosiah 10. But given we kind of move around a little bit in the timeline, where did you actually want it to start us off from?
It's an interesting story that we're going to get to here. So basically, I just want to get into verse 1 of chapter 7, then let's talk about it a little bit. So King Mosiah, there's peace in the land. King Benjamin's dead now. And there's been, you know, we're talking about Mosiah the second. Like we talked about last week, there's Mosiah the first, then there's King Benjamin, then there's Mosiah the second. Now, Mosiah the second, he has this plan now that he's taken over. And he says here that he was desirous to know concerning the people that went and dwelt in the land of Lehi Nephi. Now, have you mentioned at the beginning, there's this new land that we're hearing of now called Lehi Nephi. But we're going to refer to this a lot because the city of Nephi, or the land of Nephi, where everyone was before they made it to Zarahemla, is now called Lehi Nephi. Without trying to confuse everyone of where we're up to, basically King Mosiah says, all right, let's find out what happened to these people. And it says, and it came to pass in verse 2 that King Mosiah granted that 16 of their strong men might go up to the land of Lehi Nephi to inquire concerning their brethren. Now, if you remember back in Omni, Amalekai speaks of these men going up from the land of Zarahemla back to the land of Nephi to try and find back to the land and try and populate it again. And Amalekai says in verse 30 that I had a brother that also went with them, and I don't know anything about him since he left. I haven't heard anything from him. It's been a long time since they left, and no one's really heard of them since. So King Mosiah has gone, all right, well, let's get 16 men to go up there and find out.
Right. So the historical line is they were kicked out of the land of Nephi, and they go up to the land of Zarahemla. At a point in time, they say, actually, we want to go back to the land of Nephi, and we want to go back and try and get at the land of our inheritance back. They go down, a group of people go down, and they're never seen of again. And now, in the future, we're now at King Mosiah, and he says, what happened to those people from 50, 60, 70 years ago? Like, what actually happened to them? Should we go and try and figure out? And then, like you've said, he granted that 16 strong men might go to the land of Lehi Nephi to inquire. So there was a couple of bits of wording here. Was it Mosiah who was super curious, or did a group of people go to Mosiah and say, hey, that's my grandfather that went, or that's my dad that went. We're super keen to find out what happened to them and maybe find their bodies or find where they are. are you okay if we go? And he grants them that they can go. And this is where we now just find this whole timeline of events that's now essentially almost to the end of Mosiah.
He makes special mention in verse 3 of a man named Ammon. Now, Ammon's going to be the leader of these 16 strong men. And he talks about how they're strong and mighty men quite a few times. So he's obviously knows that something, you know, may come about. So he needs to send some strong men to go and to find them. So Ammon takes strong men. And it also mentions that he's a descendant of Zarahemla. So he's never actually, him or any of his fathers before him, have been to Nephi before, to the land of Nephi before. This is a whole new place for them because they are, well, Ammon is a descendant of Zarahemla. So he's traveling to a whole new world for him.
And I like, Clive, so I like now that they're traveling and they travel for 40 days, right? So they travel for 40 days trying to find where these people are. And they kind of know somewhat of a direction. They don't really know where they're going. So did they do circles for a few days? Or was it actually 40 days walk? Now, I imagine when the people who originally left the land of Nephi to find a new city, they must have really gone very far away because they didn't want to be disturbed by the wicked people that had basically corrupted the land of Nephi. And these couple of verses here actually give us a bit of a clue, like there's so many verses scattered throughout the Book of Mormon, give us a clue to the actual geography of the land. Because they've walked for 40 days, so obviously the land was quite significant that they could walk for 40 days without reaching the bottom or the top or the side or the other side. And so they go for 40 days and they find a hill. So verse 5, I'll read verse 5 and 6. And when they had wandered for 40 days, they came to a hill, which is north of the land of Shillom, and there they pitched their tents. And Ammon took three of his brethren, and their names were Amalekai, Helam, and Hem, and they went down into the land of Nephi. So just from a geography perspective here, there's a hill that's so big that they can see a city below it because they found this place. They don't know it's called Shillom, but you've got to remember here, Mormon is abridging these words. So Mormon's already read all of this text. And he knows that the land down there is called the land of Shillom. He knows that's where they're going. So they find this land and then they know that it's in the land of Nephi. So what does that mean? Well, essentially Nephi is like the county or the state. And within that county or state, there are suburbs. And one of the suburbs in the land of Nephi is called Shillom. And that's not a surprise. In 2 Nephi or Jacob, I think it is, the text talks about that in the land, there was a place where the Ishmaelites, in the land of Nephi, there's a place where the Ishmaelites live, the Zoramites live, the Nephites live, and the Jacobites live. So the land of Nephi is a pretty big place, and there's cities in it. And one of these cities is Shillom. And so they're in Shillom, or they walk down to Shillom, and what they're essentially arrested, right? They're arrested by the king's guards for a couple of days.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they go down there. I mean, they know what they're getting into because they can see. That's why Ammon only takes three. Which Amalekai, Helam, and Hem, we've heard their names before, but, you know, again, I mean, it can be hard to understand the scripture sometimes, but these are completely different people. You know, this is years and years later. But yeah, they go down, and the king and his guards, they arrest them, and they're arrested and sent in prison for 2 days. And it's interesting because, you know, I don't know if that's a long time or a short time for the king, but the king comes out and he wants to speak with them because he's curious. He's curious to know who these people are. He first meets them and he says, well, I am Limhi. I'm the son of Noah and the son of Zenith, who came up out of the land of Zarahemla to inherit this land. This is verse 9, which is the land of their fathers, who was made king by the voice of the people. So he's introducing himself here saying, this is who I am. This is where I've come from. And in verse 10 and 11, he explains to them that he's only keeping them alive because he's curious to know who they are. I desire to know the cause why you are so bold to come near the city walls. For this cause, I have suffered that you should be preserved.
It's interesting, right? So I was thinking they're in prison for 2 days and then they're brought before the king. Why were they in prison just for 2 days? Well, the problem they've got is that Limhi has this city, and we'll find out later that he's essentially in bondage from the Lamanites. But he wants to know who's actually crossing over into his town, into his territory. Is he under attack? Are these people spies? Why are they there? well, if they're Lamanites, maybe they would have just been shot on sight, right? But they're not. How does he know they're not Lamanites? Well, they don't look like Lamanites. The Lamanites have got shaved heads. They don't wear clothes. They've just got a leather piece girded about their loins. They do not look like Lamanites. So Limhi, his guard is not fully up. He's genuinely interested in who these people are. If you're not Lamanites crossing over into my land, then who are you? Am I under attack from another group of people that I don't know about? Or more interestingly, are you people that I should be friends with? Are you friend? Are you foe? And so he doesn't have them killed. He wants to talk to them specifically. And so that's why he has them brought up. If they were Lamanites, if they were identified as Lamanites immediately, that would have been a whole different kettle of fish. He would have gone, oh my goodness, the Lamanites are spying on us. We are under attack. This is a drama. But he knows they're not. And so then Ammon is permitted to speak. You see in verse 12, and now when Ammon saw that he was permitted to speak, he went forth and he does three things. He first of all bows, then he recognizes the king as the king. So he says he bowed himself before the king and he said, O king. So he recognizes the power and the majesty of Limhi. But then he very quickly turns. He says, I am very thankful before God this day that I'm alive and I'm permitted to speak with you, and I will endeavor to speak with boldness. So immediately Ammon, being a very faithful man, he bows before the king, shows respect, gives the king his kingly title, shows respect, but then actually turns it around and praises God. He doesn't praise the king. He praises God for allowing, he thanks God for allowing what this interaction is going on. So I thought that was just very interesting. And then, of course, he goes in and says, well, I'm Ammon and I'm from Zarahemla. Like, I'm a descendant of Zarahemla and have come up out of the land of Zarahemla to inquire concerning our brethren whom Zeniff brought up out of the land. It's interesting because, as you mentioned, Clive, in verse 9, that Limhi says, I'm the grandson of Zeniff. And then Ammon goes, well, I'm here to find out what the go is with Zeniff. Where are the people that Zeniff brought? So this incredible, Ammon's been searching for 40 days, crosses over into this land, gets arrested, and actually finds the person that he's been looking for these 40 days.
Limhi, he's excited. He's excited about this now. You know, his whole attitude changes. After throwing these guys in prison for 2 days, seemed quite bold with his speak. He then says in 14, it came to pass that after Limhi had heard the words of Ammon, he was exceedingly glad and said, now I know of a surety that my brethren who are in the land of Zarahemla are yet alive, and I rejoice on the morrow. So yet not only is Ammon excited that he's found these people, they're still alive. Limhi is also excited that he's found these people, or these people have come to him and they're alive. And so all of these people are just, they've found each other and they're in the same mind frame. They're both God-fearing people. They're humble now because of what they've seen. And it's interesting in verse 15 what Limhi says. He sort of explains his boldness, I suppose. He says, for behold, we are in bondage to the Lamanites and are taxed with a tax which is grievous to be borne. And now, behold, our brethren will deliver us out of bondage or out of the hands of the Lamanites. So he's saying, you know, we've been taxed and we're in bondage to the Lamanites, but you're here now. You can save us.
You're here to save us. Is that send the rest?
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And he says, and we will be their slaves, as in the Nephites, for it is better that we be slaves to the Nephites than pay tribute to the king of the Lamanites. That's how bad it is for Limhi. We would rather be slaves to our own brethren than to have to pay tribute, be in bondage to these Lamanites.
So as payment for you getting us out of this situation, we will just serve you forever.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And he's so excited now that he says, well, bring all your men. Go get all your men, bring them down to the city, and we'll gather the people together. We'll give them the good news. And they do, and they praise God. And all the people together, they're just, everyone's so excited about the things that have happened. And we'll learn more about the bondage that they've gone through, the things they've gone through with the Lamanites. But imagine how excited that they are at this time to find a friendly face from a people of the city they thought had been destroyed and their fellow brethren. So it must have been a great time for them.
I'm imagining just, yeah, like, hey, they would have just called everyone. Hey, there's people here, and rumor has it that they're going to set us free. Like, call your friends, call everyone. Like, we're going to the city center because this guy's here with our king and they're about to talk to us. This is the greatest day we've had. We've been waiting for this. Our fathers have been waiting for this. This is incredible. Clive, I like a little bit of the wording actually in verse 19. Therefore, lift up your heads and rejoice and put your trust in God, in that God who was the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and also that God who brought the children out of Israel, out of the land of Egypt, and caused that they should walk through the Red Sea on dry ground and fed them with manna that they might not perish. Like, they are just so stoked. They're just going for it with their words. And they stop, though, actually, to give a little bit of a history lesson. So they're talking to Ammon here with a little bit of a history lesson in verse 21. And ye are all witnesses this day that Zeniff, who was made king over this people, meaning the people who are in Shillom where they are, that Zeniff, who was made king over this people, he being overzealous to inherit the land of his father, therefore being deceived by the cunning and craftiness of King Laman, who having entered into a treaty with King Zeniff, and having yielded up into his hands the possession of a part of the land, or even the city of Lehi Nephi, and the city of Shillom, and the land round about. So they drop in here that, hey, this Zeniff guy who you're looking for, my granddad and the original king of this land, he didn't do us a massive favor. Like, we're in this issue, we're in this drama because of him. Like, he's the one that was overzealous. He could have had something, but actually our lives are a nightmare. And later on we'll learn in the next verse that everything you do, half of it, you've got to give to the Lamanites. That's how challenging it is. You've got 10 sheep, 5 of them are theirs. You grow 50 kilos of grain, 25 kilos are theirs. Like, this is not a good spot. All that work and half of it's gone. So they keep talking about the history of the land because they're trying to get Ammon up to date as quick as possible. Like, they must just be so excited. They're really going hard. So they go, bang, here's what happened to Zeniff. Here's what happened to our original king Zeniff. Here's why we're in captivity. But we haven't been left alone. You're not the first guy that came to try and rescue us. There was this other prophet who we'll learn later was Abinadi. In verse 26, and a prophet of the Lord have they slain. Yea, a chosen man of God who told them of their wickedness and abominations and prophesied of many things which are to come. Yea, even the coming of Christ. So Ammon is just there just going, man, I was just trying to look for Zeniff and I was just trying to look for like my kindred people who were lost. And you've just told me that I've stumbled upon you. Zeniff's dead. His son's dead. Now you're a new guy, Limhi.
And it doesn't even end there. Like in chapter 8, King Limhi then says to Ammon, I want you to speak to the people. I want you to tell us all about everything that's happened.
Tell us of the good times.
Yeah, between when Zeniff left all the way up to now. Like they've sort of just pushed him in going, well, this is what happened to us. This is what happened to us. Hey, can you get up here and just tell everyone else what happened to you? You know, what's been going on the other side? And then, so Ammon does, and he talks about the things. But then he also says, it says in verse 3, rehearsed unto them the last words which King Benjamin had taught them and explained them to the people of King Limhi that they might understand all the words which he spake. So we've just read a lot of the things of King Benjamin, and it's, you know, like we talked about last week, probably one of the most well-known speeches in the church. There's so much doctrine in there.
Well, I've got a question for you here, and this is one that I was thinking about. So it says here, you've just mentioned it, what is the last thing? Well, the last thing is that King Benjamin gets the people to enter into covenant. Chapter 5 is the big covenant that King Benjamin has written out that the people have to all read and kind of sign to say, yes, they're part of the covenant. And then he goes into, and then King Benjamin kind of teaches them more things about how they should be kind to each other. Is that what he taught them? Hey, obviously your God looks out for you massively. And yeah, we believe we're kind of God-fearing a little bit, but can we do what you're doing? Because obviously it's working for you.
Yeah, I suppose, because yeah, like you said, they are God-fearing people. In verse 25 of 7, it just made me think of it. Looking back, it says, for this people had not fallen into transgression. So if they'd not fallen into transgression, the Lord would have not suffered that this great evil should come upon them. So they are God-fearing people. They know that the Lord will continue to bless them if they keep following the Lord's direction. but they didn't. They fell away. They've fallen into transgression and they've been humbled and they've turned themselves about. So they are God-fearing people. They do understand the doctrine. And as we'll read later on, you know, there was great men, like you mentioned, Abinadi. So yeah, I suppose they do know the doctrine. So I guess it makes sense that, you know, King Benjamin speaks about how they are great people and here's the things for salvation, but he does bring them to the covenant of God. And I suppose, you know.
Do you reckon he does?
Perhaps.
Do you reckon he does?
Well, perhaps Ammon said, you know, you are God-fearing people. So if you were to come under this covenant, we will help you. Or maybe not like that, but maybe sort of, you know, you need to be part of the covenant people. I don't know. It's possible.
I just find it, obviously Mormon has loads and loads of records of information about what happened with Ammon and King Limhi, but he's just abridging massively. So I just find it really interesting that he says specifically in chapter 8, verse 3, and he also rehearsed unto them the last words which King Benjamin had taught them. So obviously Mormon's going, I'm not going to write in what Ammon told them. I'm just going to tell you where to find it.
Yeah, you know the last words because I've put it in. Yeah, you're right.
So I just thought at that interesting, because if I think about the people of Limhi, are they now under covenant, signed up to Ammon's preachings, and kind of they're now all one force under God, and they're not fractioned. They're the same religion, you know. So now we've got two groups of people separated by 40 days. We've got the people in Zarahemla who are worshiping the one true God, and now for possibly one of the first times ever, we've got the same doctrine and the same covenant-keeping people 40 days away now in the land of Shillom. There's almost two wards now, or two stakes, essentially.
Well, that's right, because Ammon didn't say, all right, you know, listen to what I have to say and then come with me and we'll protect you. Because in verse 4 and 5, once the things that were spoken of were over, the people went home. So they went back to their own homes. They didn't go, all right, let's all go with Ammon. It's like they've taken this covenant and then gone, okay, the Lord's with us. And then they feel safe enough to go home.
So now they're like, okay, we're now all same team. By the way, I've got this incredible record that's gold, and it was, I think it's 24 pages or something. We're now same team. You should see these national treasures that we've got. Like, we've got some records here. So, Clive, these plates, these records that they found, they haven't read them yet. They don't know what's on them. And so they really want to know what's on them. They've had them for a little while. They say to Ammon, can you read them? Can you translate? Can you tell us what's on there? And he says, no, that he can't, but he knows someone who can. And that person is a prophet. That person is a seer. That person can read them. In verse 15, and the king said that a seer is greater than a prophet. And Ammon said that a seer is a revelator and a prophet also, a gift which is greater that no man have except he should possess the power of God. And so they've got these plates, and we don't hear or see about the plates now for a little while. And they, of course, they end up being the Book of Ether. So let's put them aside and let's pretend we don't know about them just yet, only to say that at some stage Limhi gets some records, says to Ammon, can you read them? He says no, and they just give up and move on.
Right. And it makes sense that he can't read them because, you know, they're written a long, long time ago when the language was different. So now Limhi starts, I guess, recounting the story about Zenit. This is the time when Mormon decides, well, now's the time to put the story of Zenit in there, because everything else that takes place after the story of Zenit sort of leads on. So we need to understand this story first of how it all came about.
And so, Clive, this is back to exactly what you were talking about at the very start of the podcast. This is what Omni is referring to. So if you're reading this at home, if you go to Omni verse 28, I've got this written in my scriptures, Clive. This is what I think. I don't know if you agree, but I'll give it to you how I've got it. So in Omni verse 28, wherefore they went up into the wilderness. So this is those people who were driven out of the land of Nephi, went to Zarahemla, and then said, actually, no. The land of Nephi is ours. That's our inheritance. We are going to go back there. So they went up into the wilderness, and their leader being a strong and mighty man and a stiff-necked man, wherefore he caused a contention among them. They were all slain, save 50 in the wilderness, and they returned again to the land of Zarahemla. I've got that in my scriptures that that's zenith. Because if I say here, well, I'm guessing it, what you're going to take us through verse 1 and 2. I've got in verse 28 in my scriptures that that leader is zenith.
Yeah, well, that's right. But like I said, this is a Malachi just reciting the things that he knows. He knows that people went out, 50 came back because there was some kind of war. Then they went out later again. And that's all he knows about it. And so we do get this record. And yeah, zenith, we learn that zenith is a leader. And he does in verse 1, basically all the way to 3.
Of chapter 9.
Of chapter 9. It speaks of zenith. Just, yeah, like you said, go, well, we're going to go back to the city of Nephi. Now, remember, the city of Nephi, the land of Nephi, huge, huge city. They were told to flee it because of, you know, wickedness, and the Lamanites were going to destroy it. So they were told to flee, but they had gold, they had silver, they had houses, they had shops, they had all these kinds of things. So Zenith's gone, well, I'm going to take the people, I'm going to go, and we're going to get this land back. So they go, and then this is, that talks about in Omni, how there was this contention. But what happens is Zenith and all the people there, they're on this hill, and they look down to the city, and they actually see that the Lamanites that are there are actually good people. They thought that they were these bloodthirsty men and horrible men, but when they're spying on them, they says that, you know, they seem to be good people. So Zenith says, well, I don't want to go and destroy them. I actually want to go and speak to them and maybe do this in a peaceful way. Maybe we can take over, or maybe they can give us part of the land, do it in a peaceful way. But then a lot of other brethren go, no, I think we need to kill them. So there was actually quite a fight there, and so much so that they began to war with each other, that only 50 of those men survived. So Zenith, being one of them, came back, probably explained that there was a bit of contention and a lot of them died. So Zenith came back. Then he took another party. And this is what Amalekai speaks of when he says, my brother went out and I haven't heard from them since. But Zenith comes back out. And he actually goes to the Lamanites and does speak to them and says to them that is there a way that we can make this peaceful, that we can get a bit of land? And the Lamanites do. They give them a piece of land that you said before that's called Shillom.
Isn't that just so strange? Like, Zenith, obviously, yeah, he's a good leader. He's a good leader. He doesn't want to war with the Lamanites. He doesn't want his people to be at risk of being killed, but he's pretty bold in saying, okay, well, yeah, back then, there isn't the UN. People aren't meeting with each other to say, I want your land. No, you have mine. No, I don't want that. I want this. Like, people just war. People just fight each other, and whoever's the last man standing, you know, the history is written by the victor. Whoever's last, they get it. But in this case, he's like, no, there's some good people down there. Let's not war with them. Let's just ask for land. Like, that is just, that's backwards. That's just not normal. It's just totally abnormal for this age or ever. Like, you can't just go to another country and go, hey, please give me some land. Okay, no worries.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But I mean, he was so, you know, in his conviction, he was so steadfast in it that he even fought with his own brethren to try and have peace among the Lamanites. So it's an interesting, you know, dynamic, I suppose, that he saw it. You know, I'll fight with my own brethren to make peace with the Lamanites.
So Clive goes in and he has a chat. He has a chat with someone called King Laman. And he essentially, King Laman grants it to him. And I went in unto the king. So this is chapter 9, verse 6. And I went in unto the king, and he covenanted with me that I might possess the land of Lehi Nephi and the land of Shillom. I want two things. I don't want one. I don't want half. I want to have two things. And he also commanded that his people, there's no, again, Mormon, you know, what does he put in? What does he not put in? But the very next one, and he also commanded that his people should depart out of the land, and I and my people went into the land that we might possess it. And we began to build buildings and to repair the walls of the city. Yea, even the walls of the city of Lehi Nephi and the city of Shillom, through no big kind of conversations or persuasion. King Laman just goes, yep, you can have it. Whether he thought the land was no good, I'm not sure, or whether he starts to get a little bit like, oh, why did I get that so easy? But anyway, they go into the land and they're there for 13 years, aren't they, they're 12 years before King Laman starts to get a bit uneasy. Says, hang on, You've made this city amazing. It was rubbish beforehand. We couldn't do anything in it. That's why we gave it to you so quickly. I mean, I'm just kind of adding my own sort of thoughts in here, but King Laemon's kind of gone, no worries then, if you can have this land, we can't do nothing with it. You can do what you like. But then after 12 years, King Laemon says, hang on, you've made something out of this. I'm not sure that I actually want you to have it still.
Well, yeah, it's almost like King Laemon, maybe he originally planned for this. Maybe he sort of said to his people, let's let them take it because we'll get it back eventually anyway. Don't even worry about it. Either there's nothing they can really do about it or we'll take it when they've made it well. Because in verse 12, Zenef describes the Laemonites as a lazy people. So right. They want to take back the city because the people of Zenef have done this amazing work to it. So the Laemonites are lazy, and so they didn't want to do any work. The work's been done for them. Well, now we're just going to take it back over. Basically, just going to reap the rewards of all of Zenith's people, all the crops. And the Laemonites, this is what happened. Like I said, in the 13th year, they come and attack, but they don't just attack the city. I mean, they have this strategy there where they start attacking in the field, the flocks. It says halfway through verse 14, when my people were watering, feeding their flocks, and tilling their lands, a numerous host of Laemonites came upon them and began to slay them and to take off their flocks and their corns and their fields. So the Laemonites have got this plan. Well, let's just take a little bit here. We'll start killing these people and we'll slowly work our way in, I suppose.
We're not just going to raid it, trash the city walls, move straight in and just start killing people. They go to the outers. They go to the outers and take essentially some shepherds.
Well, yeah, because it's like you explained before, the Laemonites, even when they're going to war, they are just, they're bald, which I guess doesn't make a difference, but you know, they have no head covering. They're naked except for leather that's girded about their loins. So
it's easy to see them.
Yeah, exactly. It's easy to see them. It's easy to kill them if the Laemonites don't have a very good strategy. They're just not very good at, you know, going to war, I suppose. So this is what they do. The Laemonites, when they've been attacking the field, well, Zenef comes with an army and they go to war. And I suppose this is more when Zenef becomes humbled and he prays to the Lord that they would be spared. And it works because the fight is so full on that the Lord blesses the people of Zenith, that 3,043 of the Laemonites are killed and only 279 of the Nephites are killed.
Right. Yes, you've got in verse 18 and verse 19, the Lord did hear our cries, did answer our prayers, and we did go forth in his might. That's interesting, isn't it? That's interesting wording that they went forth in his might. But yes, he does have to bury his own. But this one attempt, so after 13 years, King Laemon goes, you've done a great, great body of work to that land. We're going to try to take it back. King Zenef is able to fight them away. And for the first attempt, the Laemonites are beaten and they withdraw. And then we move into chapter 10 and there's more wars, right?
Yeah, there's more wars, but Zenef is sort of more military-minded, I suppose, now. He knows what to expect. So he makes weapons, and he has the people make weapons, and he posts guards around about the city. And he does such a good job that for another 22 years, there's peace in the land. So that's on top of the already 12 years that have passed into the 13th year.
13, wasn't it?
Yeah, into the 13th year. And now another 22 years on top of that. So it's a long time that they've been there now. They've had peace. They're able to build this city.
I'm imagining that, Clive, to your point just then. So they've been there for 35 years. They didn't go, it wasn't just a wasteland of nothingness and they'd have had to start from zero. There was already buildings there. There was already roads there. There was already walls there. They were in a bit of disrepair. They had to get them back to a good standard. But the land was, they didn't start from nothing. Not like when Nephi first arrived. Or when the Laemonites pushed them out, there was already stuff for them to work on. And so now 35 years later, it's a pretty good place to be. The Laemonites have one crack, can't get it. And now after this total of them giving the land up for 35 years, they go, okay, we're going to have another go. But actually it's under a different king, right? King Laemon, who first entered the agreement with Zenef, dies. I think
it's
in verse 6. And it came to pass that King Laemon died. And his son began to reign in his stead, and he began to stir his people up into rebellion against my people. Therefore, they began to prepare for war, and to come up to battle against my people. King Laman, well, the new king of the Lamanites, he's not so happy, and now he gets to a stage where he wants the land for himself because it's such a buzzing metropolis, essentially.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, like I said, Zenith is this great leader. He's already had spies, you know, go out after he's already had the city protected by these guards. Now he's had spies that go out that see that the Lamanites are preparing for war. So in his infinite wisdom, and, you know, I suppose with the blessing from the Lord, he knows what he should do. And he gets the women and children, they go and hide in the wilderness. And he gets the old men, and it says, and the young men, and I suppose everyone in between. And he gets them ready for battle against this new leader. Not sure if it mentions who the new leader is. Maybe it does in the next few chapters. But this new leader of the Lamanites that come and want to battle with them. Yeah, Zenith basically tells us that, like you explained, the way they are, you know, they're not really well prepared for battle. And he goes in to explain, or at least it's explained to us, why the Lamanites are the way they are. And we've read, you know, through the years or through the few chapters and books that the Lamanites have been lied to, but it really gets into it here.
That's right. I've got three verses highlighted for exactly what you just mentioned. That's 12, so chapter 10, 12, 13, and 17. And I'll just go through that, Clive, if you don't mind, in just a little bit, and we can really understand the depth of the hatred that the Lamanites have for the Nephites, or for essentially at this stage, are they still called Nephites, but they're just people who aren't them. So it says here that they were a wild and ferocious and a bloodthirsty people, and they were believing in the tradition of their fathers, which is this. Number one, believe that they were driven out of the land of Jerusalem because of the iniquity of their fathers. Okay. Number two, and that they were wronged in the wilderness by their brethren. Number three, they were also wronged while crossing the sea. Three specific things where they were wrong that so deeply indoctrinated into them that way back when their grandfather's grandfather's grandfather left Jerusalem, and now 400 years later, they're so angry, they think they should still be in Jerusalem. They don't even know where Jerusalem is. They wouldn't have a clue. Their dad's dad's dad wouldn't know where Jerusalem was. But they're so indoctrinated into them to hate the Nephites because they were so wronged by them. And it says here in 13, why were they wronged with them? And again, they were wronged while in the land of their first inheritance, after they had crossed the sea, and all this because of that Nephi who was more faithful in keeping the commandments of the Lord. Therefore, he was favored of the Lord, for the Lord heard his prayers and answered them, and he took the lead of their journey into the wilderness.
You can really see the difference here between the Lamanites and, I suppose, instead of calling them the Nephites, I'd say the people of God. Because if you look at the end of verse 10, it says, and it came to pass that we did go up in the strength of the Lord to battle. Now the Lamanites knew nothing concerning the Lord, nor the strength of the Lord. Therefore, they depended upon their own strength. So you've got the people who are God-fearing people and rely on the strength of the Lord versus the Lamanites who are probably strong, probably have good weapons, but they can only rely on themselves because, like you read there, they've been taught these things for a long time. So they're not going to be God-fearing people because everything that's God-fearing is the things that their fathers taught that were completely wrong because they were the ones that were wronged originally.
So Clive, there's one other, and yeah, you're spot on. There's one other part here. What about this for some wording? This is in 17. And thus they have taught their children that they should hate them. This is the Lamanites teaching their children that they should hate anyone who's not them, that they should hate them. Even worse, they should murder them. They should rob and plunder them and do all they could to destroy them. Therefore, they have, and this is the important part, an eternal hatred towards the children of Nephi. Eternal hatred? Eternal? I mean, who's our grandfather or grandmother from 400 years ago? I wouldn't have the foggiest. But these people, it's so indoctrinated into them that those people from all those years ago were so wronged that now you should hate them as well. Like that, and that's just how you live. Like you just live that way. It's just crazy to think about to me.
I agree. It's very much you know, how could you hate somebody for something that you truly don't really understand? You know, how can you be so dark in your heart that you'll believe the traditions of your fathers and just decide that, well, I'm not going to follow anybody because of the things that I've been taught a long, long time, 400 years ago, like you said.
You know what just came to my mind back then? Remember when at the end of 2 Nephi, when Lehi is blessing all the children and he blesses the children of Laman and the children of Lemuel, and he specifically says something to them like, your sins aren't going to be on you. They're going to be on your father because that's how you've been taught. That's a lot to put on Laman and Lemuel. 400 years later, people are still hating things because of Laman and Lemuel. And Lehi blesses all of those people and say, well, essentially, you don't know any different. That's just how you've been taught. Now, hundreds of years later, all of this ill will is still all riding on Laban and Lemuel's decisions. Like, it's a big deal.
It is.
Clive, I think that's it, right? Next week, we're going to keep going with this record. This record, by the way, goes from chapter 9 to chapter 22, and then a little bit more later on. Is that right?
Yeah. Then it talks about a little bit of Alma as he's getting on, and then it gets back into the present time.
So there's a lot. So we're reading this record from Zenith down, and eventually we'll get back. We'll circle back to I think we get back to Limhi. So we'll talk about King Noah, and I think we're talking about Abinadi as well. So that's going to be really, really interesting. But just this whole historical journey on, I'm just finding fascinating to look at and to talk about. Have you got a quote to end the episode on?
I do, actually. I was thinking about, as you said, the generations and generations and how it affects. And I found this quote by Spencer W. Kimball. It says, "The Sunday school of this generation and the next must answer, did you or did you not wield a powerful influence in the creating of kingdom builders for this life and for the eternities? The Sunday school must remember that it is not enough to teach ethics and good practices and common courtesies. It must teach exaltation through live faith in God."
Amazing. Thank you for joining us. If you could hide to Colab Podcasts, check us out on Facebook, where you get all of our updates and where we post our daily communications. Thank you all, and we will see you for Mosiah chapter 11 and the story of Abinadi.
Can't wait.
Thank you.